Good morning. This is Leanne Lester with Clear Connections on All You Ever Wanted to Know. And I am so happy to have in studio with me today Rhonda Rowe. I met her a few years ago through a mutual friend. And although I don't know her really well, I know a little bit about her story. And I thought she would be a great guest to have in and just chat with about what she does, what she's passionate about, and the vision that she's had. And so welcome, Rhonda.
Oh, thank you so much. It's wonderful to be here with you.
I know Rhonda has probably been on our station before, but I just wanted to just talk to her a little bit from the perspective of just being a woman and what she's passionate about and how God leads us and directs us and calls us into what he has for us and for other people and using our gifts and abilities. Amen. So, Rhonda, just tell us a little bit why or what your passion is, where your vision came from, and yeah.
Okay. Is this in particular regarding Africa?
Sure. Yeah. Because that's what I know about you.
Okay.
And know that you are very passionate about that.
Definitely. Yeah. And I think my passion my whole life has been children.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that came from my Nana. She loved kids and instilled a deep love for children. And when God called me, I believe he called me from a child to Africa. I had vision of me as an adult working with little children, and they were African children. Mm. So I remember that very distinctly. And so as an adult, you know, always doing sponsoring of children through World Vision or different organizations, I was here in Canada and I was sending money over.
Mm.
And then there came the point where God called me to go physically. And that was a scary endeavor, mm-hmm. the thought of it at first, right? Yeah.
Often when he plants those seeds in us, they are scary and we have to step out and see him bring it together and unfold.
Definitely. It wasn't something that I would have thought of doing physically. I was comfortable being here and supporting from a distance.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I started to sense that I was supposed to go, I had just studied sub-Saharan Africa in university.
Mm.
And I was like, nobody in their right mind would go there unless they were called by God, because there were just so many challenges. And so I started saying, okay, God, I'm really terrified, but I need you to do something to enable me to go, because I want to go. I want to do what you want me to do there, whatever you have for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was at Prairie Harvest. There was a worship service, and I just started worshiping, and I just said, God, you need to take this. And he did. It literally, the fear completely left me. I felt it physically leave. And not only to go to Africa, but I was terrified to ride motorcycles. So I had to ride motorcycles in Africa. So it was just, it wasn't just a fear to get there. It was, it encompassed everything. It was like a complete transformation. I became brave in ways I never thought I could be.
Mm.
And so I thank God for that, because it wasn't something I mustered up within myself.
Right,
yeah.
Right. So I didn't mention before, but you live in little small town Saskatchewan of Stockholm.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
And here you are traveling across the world to Africa. That's just amazing. And I guess it just goes to show that God really cares about each one of us and the dreams that he places in us.
Oh, absolutely.
And the vision there. And then he enables that and draws that out of us as long as we're obedient and willing to go. And you were willing to go. So what did you do, or how did you equip yourself with this new adventure and endeavor and calling that God has now brought to you at that time?
Well, I think the first time I went over, it's actually through meeting Tara Moore at the time, and there was something really special about her, and I was drawn to her, and she was sharing about the school. This was way back before they had the new place. I thought, wow. So I was just telling people about her. I was just, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then God started kind of, when he was calling me, I thought, oh, gee, this is interesting how, you know, I'm being called to Uganda, and because I'd always wanted to go to Kenya.
Mm-hmm.
And so we ended up in 2011, my first trip over. I really didn't know what it was going to look like, except I was going to volunteer at the school and in some children's homes and things and with orphans. So that's how it started. But when I was actually physically there, that's where the further dream to equip women with proper sewing skills came, because I was observing women who were sewing, often under a tree or out in the street. They'd have their little sewing machine out and they'd be sewing. But as I watched them, they didn't really sew skillfully, at least a lot of the people I was seeing. So I thought, you know what? This is a need. I can sew. I need to go back home. And I came back home and I applied and I got my licensing in the U.S. And then I went back to start training and teaching sewing in Africa. Yeah, because that was a need. Like, I went over thinking I was going to do one thing and God redirected me and said, no, this is a need. This is a need.
Yes. And often he does that, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And he
yeah.
takes what we are interested in. Like you said, you had sewn and had an interest in sewing.
Yes.
And just use that for his purposes while you were there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very exciting. Yeah. Very exciting. So since going and having that vision and getting your training, how has that progressed now?
Okay, let's see. We ended up renting the old Our Village site. My friend Paul, who's involved with Our Village, had messaged me and he said, you know, it's for rent. Would you like to rent it? And I thought, well, no. And then I thought, well, maybe I'll pray about it. So it ended up we rented the older property for a few years. And we fixed up some of the buildings and we helped them plant gardens. We got a goat project moved there that some people in this local area had donated money for a goat project. So the goat project actually
goat
okay. Yeah, little goat. So we started with three and ended up eventually with 12. So this last trip last year I was able to disperse the goat projects because we stopped renting there and we dispersed the goat so that it helped not just the family there, it helped start some other goat projects, one other one in Iganga, Uganda, and another one in a new location, which I had never been to before, was in Jinja. It was in the ghetto. And that's where I actually met a group of ladies who needed sewing instruction and where God blessed me with the most amazing teacher who I was able to put in charge of teaching these girls because I wasn't able to stay for the duration that I thought I was going to last year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the goat projects were part of it. It wasn't just sewing. It's everything. It's sustaining. It's empowering. It's so that they can become self-sufficient, right? So
absolutely.
Yeah.
And oftentimes, I mean, we can't. I mean, there are missionaries that have picked up and moved there and have stayed in other countries to continue to assist and help with the work. But just as you said, you know, being that resource to them to help them to stand on their feet and to empower these women. And you had mentioned something earlier when we were chatting before our interview, just about how empowering these women are so important.
Yes, absolutely.
Do you want to speak about that a little bit?
Yeah, I think for me, because I love children so much, and that's why I went to Africa too. Part of it was I knew I'd be working with children and I love children. But when I saw the women and how the women are so responsive and how they're so vulnerable over there, they don't have the social systems in place like we do here. And if their husband dies, if the family doesn't allow them to stay in their home, they're put out on the street and they become widows and they become penniless and they have no skills. So it affects the children. So by helping the women and empowering the women, I realized I could help more than just the children. And I think it's important to have that framework where the women are feeling like they're contributing because they work hard. I found like the women over there are really hard workers and they always seem to be busy doing stuff, even if it's just cleaning or whatever. But when you ask them, would you like to learn how to sew? Oh, yes, mom. Yes, mom. They want to learn. So I think that's half the battle is having a student who wants to learn because then it's easier to teach.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's interesting. You said that they call you mom.
Yeah, they call me mom. Even the men do. Like if they're younger, it's a symbol of respect. Like they'll say mom. Yeah. It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
It's not just the little kids. It's my big boy, Ali. He's 28 now, I think. And he always calls me mom, but he is like a son to me. He's become like a son of my heart. And
you've developed great relationships with the people there.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's just uncanny, but yeah, I miss them all the time. And it's even though I didn't give birth to some of the people, they are still like my children, even though they're adults. But yeah, they're so he does call me mom like a mom, like you would your son would call you mom.
Right.
But there are people who just generally they'll say hi, mom. Yeah, as a courtesy.
What a great honor.
Yeah, it is cool.
Yeah. So how many times have you been?
I have a horrible memory. I think I've been 5 times. So, okay. Yeah.
And had you, am I correct in saying that you have just come back?
I came back last year.
Oh, last year.
April.
Okay.
Yeah. I was supposed to be there for 10 weeks. I ended up having to come home 4 weeks early because my husband was in an accident. So I needed to come back.
Okay. And is there future trips now?
Hopefully, yes. I've been doing some just a little bit of fundraising, and I've been saving and planning to go back definitely to do some follow-up with the projects that were put in place on this last trip. And also I was involved with a Days for Girls project that Kathleen Gibson here in town had spearheaded. So I delivered, I did the presentation, but we need to go back and see how the girls are doing and how the project is doing now. So yeah, it'd be more of a follow-up trip, I think, this time.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So what is that program about that you're working with Kathleen on?
It was a Days for Girls. It's an organization that it's for girls who, in those countries, a lot of times they don't have sanitary products for, mm-hmm. you know, that time of the month. And
right.
So they become targets for men who are going to exploit them and the sex trade and different things. So this project, I think part of it was for that, but also a lot of girls will just not go to school during that time of the month.
And so they're so missing days out on for valuable girls, education.
Oh, yeah,
time.
And education is huge over mm-hmm. there. They need to have education. Mm-hmm. And so this project, we got together with a group of ladies, and we sewed these kits, and I was able to deliver them and to present on how to use them. Mm-hmm. And it was at a school, so the head teacher was going to oversee everything.
Okay.
But I need to go back over now and
just do the
see
follow-up.
How did this go and mm-hmm. see what would you change? What did you like about using this? Was it... Because they're very private over there in Uganda. You can't hang your underwear or, you know, mm-hmm. any undergarments have to be hung in your home. Like, mm-hmm. So this was quite a branching out in a new area for me. And also for them, it was something that they hadn't heard of at the school. Like, they knew nothing about this. So mm-hmm. it was kind of exciting to be part of a new project and partner with a group of ladies here to make mm-hmm. a difference over there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So... just to recap, your vision came from first speaking with Tara Moore and feeling led at a service that you were attending at here and just executing that vision. Is there any other organizations that you're affiliated with in executing your vision?
Well, our church is my covering. Like, when I go over, mm-hmm. it's under the auspice of our church. So mm-hmm. in Whitewood, we have a... yeah, the church is my covering. I don't go with a mission board per se,
okay.
but it's just through them.
So essentially you are a missionary.
I guess, yeah. I don't really call myself a missionary. I always say I'm doing volunteer work and I'm yeah. a teacher. And but I guess, yeah, for all intents and purposes, I do a multitude of things, including preaching and teaching. I don't preach in Canada, but they always ask me to preach over there. So I do preach in Africa.
So you're well equipped. You're a teacher. You're a preacher. You're a mom.
I know. And grandma.
And oftentimes, even our experiences of everything that we go through enables us to go and impact other people.
Oh, definitely.
And God somehow takes all those things and brings them together and uses what we have or mm-hmm. what we've experienced for His glory and His purposes. Mm-hmm. And yet still, I think it's amazing because He still... is concerned about our own desires and dreams
oh,
and
absolutely.
Goals.
Absolutely.
So yeah. on that note, goals, we often talk on this program about goals and mm-hmm. and how important they are
mm-hmm.
and not that we can attain all those on our own strength, but how important are goals to you and what are some goals that you have or have had and had them met?
In regards to Africa or just life in general?
Both.
Okay, goals. Well, I always wanted to be a mom, so that I've been a mom for a long time, not only to my own children, but other people's children. And so being a mom was really important to me. And then the greatest surprise, of course, was becoming a grandma. Who knew that would be the most amazing role? And it wasn't necessarily a goal, but had I known how wonderful it was, it would have been a goal for sure, because they've been such a bright spot in my life. I think goals for Africa... sometimes I think we get an idea in our head of how we think things should be set up. And then, you know, the sewing school and wanting to do that and having a building. And I am planning to go look at a building. But at the same time, I think sometimes it's not necessarily about the building. It's about equipping people. And we don't necessarily need a building except for storing the sewing machines.
Mm-hmm.
But so I'm kind of going, okay, do we purchase a building as a central place where people will come and learn, or do I continue to go to the people, which is what I've been doing. And because a lot of people live in the villages where there's no electricity, they still use the treadle machines. So that is one thing that I learned last year was how to use a treadle from the girl in the ghetto in Jinja, which blew my mind because she taught me in 5 minutes and I thought, oh my goodness, this girl's amazing. She can teach. So I was able to, you know, I had been praying. My goal was to find teachers last trip. And God just presented them to me. Here she was in the least likely place, right?
And isn't that often the case too?
Like, who would have picked the ghetto? But God said, you know, I've chosen the weak things of the world to confound the wise. And he does this over and over. And I'm always touched by that over there because I think, wow, God, you know, you sent me to teach, but I feel so much like the student. You're teaching me so much. And so whether it's a building that happens one day or whether I continue to go back to these projects and empower the women within their own communities and their own projects, like not necessarily take her out of the ghetto, but empower her within her place in the ghetto where she's grown up so that they can change the face of the ghetto, you know, change it from a rundown, broken place to bright and beautiful, full of skilled people, artists. I found jewelry makers there making beautiful jewelry. And I was just blown away. I was like, God, this is so amazing. And so I think my vision has changed from 2011, 2012, 2014 to now. It's just simply to equip and bless and where they are. And if a building is in the works at some point, yes, I would embrace that. But for now, I think it's just to go where they are and meet them where they are.
So walk me through a day when you're there working with these women. What would that look like?
I wish I could bring all the sights and sounds and the crazy bird calls and everything. And it's so wonderful there. Really talking about it doesn't do it justice because it's such a different place. And when I get there, I just breathe in deeply because it's the smell. When I get to Entebbe Airport, it's like, oh, I'm home. The smell is different. And the feeling of the air is different. And the people, they're just so social and gregarious and they welcome you. And it's just wonderful. So a day, let's see. A first day there, I would probably take my little car ride from Entebbe Airport to, I go to a hotel in Kampala, which is a it's just above Sanyu Baby's home where I've done some volunteer work. And I get a bit of a rest and then I hit the ground running. And we go and I meet with people. I bump into people I know because I've been there so many times and we talk and we chat and I see how their families are doing. You know, we do an update. And then once I get to my place, then it's a process of, okay, I get something happening for the day and we go, whether it's planting a garden or checking the goats or, you know, and usually the days are full. They're beyond, I think, how do I explain it? I get more done in 7 weeks there than I would get done here in 7 months. It just seems to be the way things go. Like I get up, I have my quiet time, I have my coffee, and then I'm out the door and I'm gone all day pretty well doing stuff with the people, whether it's ministering or teaching or setting up things or overseeing.
And so you're not necessarily just going and sitting with one of these women sewing all day?
Oh, no, absolutely not. A lot of it's building relationships because I think it's important that the people know that they can trust you, that you're their friend. You're not there. And a lot of times it works both ways too, because they see me and I come as a white woman into their culture and they think, aha, money. And I'm like, no, sorry. I always tell them, I'm not here to give you money. I'm a teacher. And then they're so excited. Oh, and then their faces light up and they're excited that I can teach them. And even the people who don't speak English, when I would pull out a book to, say, read with a little one, the adults would come over and they'd want to look at the pictures. So they have such a thirst to learn. It's so exciting. And yeah, it's just, they're an amazing culture, both Uganda and Kenya. Kenya's a different culture. I found it a little different. Ugandans are a bit more polite, I think. And no offense to Kenyans, because that's my heart. I actually moved to Kenya last year. I have a place there. And but it's different. The dynamics, I found some things were different there.
So typically, how long would you stay there? I know you mentioned
it. It varied.
It varies.
Ideally, I would like to be there half a year. It would be nice to be there for 6 months because what we want to teach really needs me to be on the ground longer than what I'm able to. So for when I've been there, I do what I can and set things in place and get people started, and the Goat Project's pretty well, you know, they're pretty prolific. They keep going. they're really, it's a great thing to start because the goats, you know, they're pretty good at giving birth. They don't need a lot of hands-on, and then you just have to do vet bills and things like that and food and water. And then the garden projects, you know, once you start them, then they can keep on with that. So those are vital.
Well, we're just going to take a quick break, and we will be back in just a few minutes with Rhonda Rowe. She is a Martha Pullen, is that correct?
Yes, Martha Pullen.
instructor, sewing instructor, sewing teacher. And she had a vision to go to Africa and just lend a hand there and use her gifts and abilities. And she's a great teacher and has a heart for the people there. And we will be back in just one moment. Well, we're back with Rhonda Rowe, who is a worker in Africa. She doesn't really call herself a missionary, but she has a heart for the people there. And she does a multitude of things. She teaches, she helps to get a goat project going, she gardens, and she just loves the people there and building the relationship with the African people in Kenya and Uganda. And it's just been so good to have her in and just get to know her a little bit more and talk about her passion for this country and this and the people there. And so, Rhonda, I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about just provision and how have you seen God provide for you to execute the vision that you have and to get this project going?
Well, I think a lot of it has been people who have heard what I'm doing, and they'll come up to me and they'll just say, I want you to put this towards your project or one of the projects. And so I'd say, well, where would you like it to go? Do you want it to go to the sewing, goat project? They say, put it wherever you need it, feeding children, whatever. So I usually wait, I get there, and then we'll purchase the goats. I'll tell them, you know, this is what your money's doing. A friend donated $100 last year, and that was enough to cover the plowing of the land, the seeds, everything for planting a half acre of maize and beans last year. So $100 here doesn't go very far, but that half acre fed a lot of people. So it's rewarding to be the courier of people's gifts from here. And for me personally, I usually raise my own funds for my trip over. And I also use my face painting skills to raise money. Organizations hire me to face paint. And then that money usually goes to help on a regular basis. We take care of some people over there. So we send monthly donations. And so through the face painting and provision over there, we've tried to teach the church we've been working with basically to pray in the provision. And we saw last year thing like everything seemed to just come. Like the Goat Project was put in place, the Garden Project, even the land, it was a gift. It was a donation of one season for them to plant. And I said, you know what, we don't have to buy it. Because land's expensive in Kenya, more so than Uganda. Okay. Although the place we wanted to buy in Uganda was way too expensive. That's why we stopped renting. They wanted 200,000 American dollars for 2 acres. I said, no, no, that's too much money. So we're trying to teach them that, you know, God sees and he knows. And so if we pray and we believe, he will provide. And we've seen it over and over there. And so when I would speak to them in the church, we'd be able to rejoice together, see how God has provided. You know, we didn't ask man. We asked God, God, we need this. And we saw the provision through people, of course. I mean, people donated.
Yeah, because God chooses to use us
and touch people's hearts but there was no like begging or anything like that. It was just, no, let's go quietly. God knows, we'll pray about it and then watch him work. And so it's exciting to partner with God and see him do these things, because a lot of things we could never put together so precisely and so perfectly and so marvelously. And then when I see it unfolding, I stand back and I go, wow, this is so cool. I get to watch this happen. I get to do this with these people and see them become more in awe of God and how he provides.
Yeah, what a testimony.
I know. It's awesome. It's just, it's incredible. And the people are, they're thankful for every single thing that comes in. Everything. Even a soccer ball. One soccer ball, 100 kids, they're excited. So it's gratifying, because we don't have that same sense of awe and I think thankfulness here because we've been raised in so much. Mm-hmm. So we usually need to get something bigger to be more excited. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like a soccer ball for my kids, that wouldn't have done anything. They would have went, oh, thanks. You know,
it's a soccer
but
ball.
because what's a soccer ball here? But for them there, when they're using like, you know, plastic bags all kind of tied and rolled together to get an actual soccer ball was a huge deal, right?
Yeah.
So it's wonderful to see that, to see the innocence and just the gratitude.
Yeah,
for the people.
Amazing. Wow. Yeah. I see also that you've brought a few little goodies in to show me.
Yeah.
So what do you have here? Let's try to explain a few things,
awesome.
If we can.
I only brought a few, but because we're talking about the sewing and stuff,
yes,
I brought
absolutely.
Some of the fabric back from Uganda and Kenya.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll just go over and get the bag.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I've had so many experiences. There's so much. Sorry about the crinkling bag. It's from Winners. It's not from Africa. Well, this crinkly one is. This is actually a bag from a wonderful place in Jinja, Uganda.
Mm.
And it's called Kilimbera. And they actually have a weaving, like the looms where they weave threads that they purchase in Kenya, but it's in Uganda. So they had all these bright threads. My friend owned it. So I was able to, I taught at a school for 3 weeks when a teacher was sick.
Mm-hmm.
And the lady who hired me had this shop.
Mm-hmm.
So this was wonderful.
I wish our listeners could see the fabric on this bag.
Isn't it beautiful?
It's beautiful. And
it's
just the colors in it are just wonderful.
And it was neat to see them. And they demonstrated how they did the hand weaving. Because a lot of things are done by machine today.
Mm-hmm.
But this is all hand done.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unique to Uganda. A lot of stuff in Uganda is imported from China, believe it or not. Just like here.
Okay.
So when you buy a souvenir, sometimes it's not made in Uganda. But Kilimbera has stuff that's unique to Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something I brought in. And there's lace and stuff. These are trims from trims that I buy for, you know, probably
beautiful.
50 cents in Uganda.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll show you, this is some beautifully embroidered. There's a lot of
lovely fabric. Just so our listeners know, it's pink embroidered with
a turquoise
blue.
And
very lovely.
It's gorgeous. And I think like there's a lot of East Indian people who have come to set up businesses in Uganda.
Mm-hmm.
So they bring in all these beautiful fabrics to make their beautiful dresses.
Have great resources there
and it's
to sew with.
Way cheaper than bringing it over from here. Even their thread, it costs about 15 cents for a spool of thread there. And it's beautiful thread.
Yeah.
And then there's different things like this one is a traditional,
very traditional
piece of
looking.
Fabric, and they make it, I call it a muumuu. It's not a muumuu, but you know, you kind of get the picture.
Yeah.
So this is a piece of fabric that all you have to do is do the side seams and the bottom, and you're done. So this was...
Yeah. And explain what that one looks like.
It's a tie-dye. It's a beautiful bright orange with navy tie-dye. So... When you slip it on, it just goes over your head like a tunic.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have places for your arms to go through, and then it's just straight down. So it's very comfortable. It's very colorful. And a lot of the women
very
wear these to move about. And it's hot there, so this is kind of cool. And it's traditional to Uganda.
Mm-hmm.
And this one is more comfortable because it doesn't have, like, the belt. Like some of the traditional dresses will have a belt and stuff. So this one just hangs straight down. So it's very comfortable. And they can work in it, but they also look nice when they're moving about in the town.
Yeah. This one? So... a lot of the projects that the women do, and as they're creating and sewing different things, is it predominantly for their own families, or they're selling them to support their family? How does that work? Like, what's the intent behind
the sewing?
The sewing.
I think probably some of them are sewing for themselves. A lot of them, hopefully, they're getting some income. I know there was one lady I hired. She was doing uniforms for children. So I hired her to do a couple of uniforms for some school children.
Mm-hmm.
And there again, the quality wasn't there. I looked at the sewing and I thought, man, how did she learn to sew? You know, who taught her? And then I went to another lady in Uganda and she was so incredibly skilled. All I had to do was tell her the measurements, and then I went and picked it up, and I was blown away by her tailoring skills. So you have both, right? So she was definitely sewing to sell.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's got to be part of the goal, because if they can't sell their stuff, they won't be able to buy more fabric to make stuff for their family or to feed their family.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely a goal, is to teach them proper sewing skills so they can be at the top of the ladder, so to speak, in their ability to produce goods that people are going to go, you know what, I want to hire you because your work is really, really top notch.
Mm-hmm.
So,
So you essentially, I often talk on Clear Connections here about being a coach, about being a mentor, being a teacher, and just listening to you, those are all qualities and the ability that you have. Is you're like a coach and you're a teacher and a guide to these women, investing in their lives and pouring into them and equipping them.
Yeah,
and
that's the key, I think, is to equip and to, I don't want them to just sew. I want them to sew really well. Mm-hmm. I want it to be something that's going to be passed on from generation to generation and to teach the ones who show promise to be the teachers so that not just anybody's teaching, because you know what I'm saying? Like if we, it's just like flying an airplane. They don't just put anybody up there. They have skilled teachers who train them so they fly the planes well, so it's safe. Well,
absolutely.
It's the same with any skill, learning how to play guitar. You want the best teacher. You want somebody who's going to teach you how to play well. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the same with the sewing. Mm-hmm. I don't want them to just sew. I want them to sew really well so that they can make some money.
You're drawing that out of them. You see that natural ability or gift that they've had or that they've worked on to this point.
Yeah.
And you're pulling that out and drawing that out of them. For the betterment of them and their families.
Yeah.
And that's just awesome.
Yeah. And the girl in Jinja, in the ghetto that I was talking to about earlier, Alice, she asked me, she said, I want to learn design. And I told her about what happened with my husband's accident. And I had to go home. But I said, when I come back, I will teach you simple design. Mm-hmm. So I have a simple, it's basically an embellished pillowcase dress.
Oh, it's adorable.
So, you know, it's just a simple design.
Yeah.
But from this, they can make so many things. And then from there, you pick the right kind of fabric. You teach them how to do a French seam, how to embellish with a bit of lace and stuff. And they'll be able to sell these in the market in Uganda, in Jinja especially. Mm-hmm. A lot of white people go to Jinja because it's like a paradise, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, so this is one of the goals, is to have a line of children's clothing that eventually they'll be able to market and sell. And they won't have to get a copyright because I'm just going to let them do it. You take my design,
awesome.
You just
that's
do
great.
It. Because why not, right?
Yeah, yeah. And just investing into them. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Maybe we can take some pictures
of
your work and what they do and then post them on our Facebook page.
Oh,
and then that way our listeners can actually see what we're seeing here today. And it's just amazing. The fabric is beautiful.
It's so beautiful and bright.
It's
This is actually Canadian fabric, this stuff here.
Mm-hmm.
But the other beautiful fabric was from Africa. So you can get it in both countries.
Yeah. Well, this is just awesome, Rhonda. I'm so glad that you were able to come in this morning and have a chat with me and just share a little bit about your heart and your vision and what God has taken you into and how he's enabled that to happen for you.
Thank you.
And if anybody is interested in just knowing a little bit more about what you do or getting to know you, if there could be somebody out there that's listening that, you know, is just really, what you're saying is really resonating with them.
Absolutely.
And, you know, they're feeling maybe led into doing what you're doing or just want to ask you some questions.
Oh, sure.
Would you be open to that?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. If anybody has questions or, like you're saying, it might be resonating. Somebody's going, oh, I've been wanting to go to Africa my whole life. I always tell people it's never too late. You're never too old. You're never too young. If you have that desire, there is a perfect time for everything. But definitely, if you have questions and you feel drawn to maybe explore more about, oh, gee, maybe I'd like to go. Sure. Absolutely. Contact
so how
me.
Can our listeners get in touch with you then, Rhonda?
What do you feel is the best way?
Phone number?
Yeah, absolutely. I can give my phone number. It's they can call me or text me.
Mm-hmm.
It's 306-621-4400.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if they wanted to email me, you could put that up on your website if you like.
Sure. Yeah. Or just give us your email address right now.
Okay,
as well.
Sure. It's long. So it's all lowercase. The first word is Swedish. Swedish, and then there's a hyphen, Rose, Rose, hyphen, cottage, cottage, at hotmail.com.
Great.
That's long. Do you think anybody's going to remember that?
They can. The listeners can just give us a call at the station, too, and we can make sure that they're in touch with Rhonda. So thank you so much, Rhonda, for coming in. It's just been a great half hour of chatting with you, and
well,
I just
you.
Wish you all the best.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's been fun chatting with you, too.
Awesome.
And I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, you've been listening to Clear Connections on All You Ever Wanted to Know, and just have a great day and be blessed.